listening to Real Talk on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
Now, you're on Reality Check Radio, Real Talk with Rodney Hyde. It's so wonderful to be here, and we've got a special guest. I always say that because, to me, all our guests are special. We wouldn't have them on otherwise, and we're always blessed to have them. And this morning we have our special guest, Christine Smith, who's our homeschooling guru. And I must get her to tell us about this, has a podcast which helps homeschoolers, not just here in New Zealand, but all around the world. Good morning, Christine.
Good morning, Rodney.
I can't tell you, and you'll get to learn this as we go through the show, how wonderful it is to have you on at this juncture in my life. But we'll get to that. But first of all, you're not just a person. By the way, I believe that you have a RCR distinction.
Tell me more. What is it?
You are the first mother and son combination that we've had on RCR.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Because your wonderful son, Nathan, was on with Cam Slater on The Crunch and did a wonderful job.
He did. He did.
And you must be so proud of him.
Oh, we are. We really are.
And the thought that we have a mother and son on RCR tickled me. And I had to do a shout out to Cam and to Nathan. And even before I connected you two, I had been approached by Nathan Smith as an MP and always respected him, which would amount to about two journalists in the world that have interacted with me. And I wrote for the NBR for a while until I got deplatformed, and I appreciated his writing. So you should be very proud of him. He's a wonderful, wonderful man, and he's a testament to two loving parents and homeschooling system.
Thank you. But I must just correct a little slip of your tongue there, Rodney. He's never been an MP.
No, sorry, me.
Yeah,
when I was an MP.
Okay, got you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. No, maybe I slipped that up because, as you know, I'm a bit under the weather. We're going to be talking homeschooling, and we're going to be talking it in the context of affordability in particular and how to get started. And let me put all my cards on the table, because it's like I get the gardening man on and I'm trying to figure out what to do in my garden. I'm going to homeschool my son next term, and this is a firm decision that I've taken, but I'm a little troubled by it in a few dimensions. I have homeschooled my two older girls for two or three terms and loved it. But I'm going to homeschool my son next term. Do you want to know why? I suppose you have to say yes now, don't you?
Please.
I feel for him going off to school, because I know him. He's a little bit different. He's not your average boy. I guess no boys are. But he's high on the empathy stakes. I think quite smart. But it's very clear to me that the teacher and the curriculum don't match him. And she's complaining directly to us about him, and I understand that. And his performance in school is appalling. So he's 10 this month and can't do the four times table. He's bright, extremely bright, but he's clearly switched out of school. And I think it's because they have him doing projects which don't interest him. So the thing that has brought this to a head is that he was required to do a project on something of history. And, you know, they make a big cardboard thing and they take pictures and they stick all this up. And in the past, we've ended up having to do it with the girls because they can't be bothered and we do half of it. And then they display it in the classroom and they get parents to come in to look at it. And the teacher started emailing us saying that my son has not done anything of this project. And I looked at this project and could see absolutely why he wouldn't, because it doesn't interest him. If you want him to read something about history, he will. If you want him to try and write a story about history, he will, but getting a box and sticking things on, not interested, because he sees that as sort of make work and play work. And then I looked at his performance, because they tell you this, he's below average, which I can't believe. And so on that snap, I thought, I'm going to have an intervention. I'm going to keep him home for term three. And I will teach him to read and to write and to do arithmetic real quick and real good and get his confidence back. Because I think I know him because he's like me. And when I was at school, I just zoned out for the whole time. Just couldn't stand it. But I wasn't stupid. But it didn't fit me. So how does that sound for a reason?
That is a very, very good reason. And I'm so proud of you for taking that action for the good of your son. And you are going to have an absolute blast together. You really will. Yeah,
I'm so looking forward to it. Yes. And I actually, my two older girls were my test run for teaching maths. And I used to go to bed at night and lie there trying to think how I'd teach them fractions or how I'd teach them long division. And my mother was still alive and she and I would get on the phone trying to remember how you do long division, things like that, because we calculators come along, we forgot. But the big success I had was with my middle daughter, who's supposedly dyslexic, tested dyslexic, and was absolutely at the bottom of maths. Had a term with her, went to the near the, like in the top three in the class, just because it was one-on-one. And I found with one-on-one, she didn't have that dyslexia problem, because if she had a problem, she'd say, oh, what's that? And so I got quite good at how to teach them. So I'm so looking forward to spending time with them. And then I learned such a lot about their personalities. But I found if they're at school, they won't sit with me to do arithmetic, because they say, oh, that's what we do at school, not with you, Dad. So I found as soon as I got them home, they would sit there easily for half an hour. And man, we could power through the work. And my oldest daughter, who's the bright one, she struggled with fractions. Couldn't get it. And my next one, who's dyslexic, because I was better at it, she just got fractions in 10 minutes, literally just grasped it because I was better at explaining it. And it's so wonderful experience, isn't it? So my thing is not to homeschool him as such, but just have a term to get him back and get his confidence up. Does that make sense?
It does. And I'm sure that listeners will be encouraged and curious to your story today, because you can do whatever you need to do for your children in those kind of situations. And it's a classic example of the school can't teach according to all of their pupils' learning needs or learning styles. You just can't do that in a classroom of, I don't know, 30 children. But when you're at home, you can design and curate exactly according to how your child will take on the information, their learning style. You can choose projects in a period of history that really appeal to him. And an education just suddenly doesn't really seem like they're learning at all because it's enjoyable. And that's one of the easy privileges we have of educating at home, is that we can take education and make it enjoyable. And don't tell them, but they're learning something.
My son's stubborn. I assume it's come from my wife, but
Yeah, sure, Rodney.
he that was quite good, wasn't it?
It was great.
The project that he was to do was on history. So he did it on skiing. Not the history of skiing, but just skiing. And so that was upset number one. They couldn't get him off that. No, I'm doing skiing. And then he couldn't be bothered doing that. So, and I can imagine it. You know how they get these, they keep them busy getting bits of boxes and sticking pictures on it and making headlines. And he's a boy. He doesn't like doing that rubbish. Not for him. It's just not for him.
They
And
need to.
he's very, very funny what he likes and what he doesn't like. And but if you give him a puzzle, we bought him a child's Bible because he's always told us he's a Christian. Long before I was a Christian, he'll sit and read that Bible till it's lights out with full concentration. So when he wants to learn, he's away. And I think kids are like that, right?
Yeah, and reading his Bible, he's reading a historical document.
Yeah.
Way
Imagine
to
an American. I can't imagine, it's a funny thing. I can't imagine him going to school and say, I'll do my project on Jesus. My daughter did her project on Charlie Upham, VC and Barr. And I said, I don't know if that's a good idea. And she said, oh no, but I'm really interested in Charlie Upham and what you said about him. And I'll get, you know, you've got his bookmark of a line and I'll read it and I'll do my project. I said, yeah, but we sort of don't extol killing Germans any longer. It's sort of not a thing. Anyway, she did it on Charlie Upham, learned a lot about the great man's life, but of course, not enjoyed by the school. Here he is winning his VC. Here he is winning VC and Bar. Do you know what else he did?
Oh, yeah, they want history on their terms, don't they? But oh, goodness me.
And she got into trouble at her previous school because she gave a speech on why we shouldn't oppose child labour. All on her own, not my help. Must be a mother again. But they had this big thing about stopping child labour. And they had all these plans about boycotting things that had been made by kids. And my daughter pointed out to the class that the children were having to work because they were so poor. And that the way not to have child labour was to prosper. And if your choice was between your children starving and your children working, you would choose working. And that unless everyone had a way of making a country prosper, maybe child labour is a thing. So she didn't even do it in a dogmatic way. So she took a hiding on that speech. And then the next speech she did at school was why we should trash the state education system and break the monopoly up.
Your
Again, that was
daughter is one girl, isn't she? Wow.
when she was little, we're going off to school and she wanted to know how tax worked. And I explained it and she said, but that's theft. You work away and they take your money. I said, yeah, it's actually right. It's, you know, theft. It's legalized theft. Parliament makes it legal. And I said, it's not just on what you earn, it's also when you buy something, they tax it. GST's on everything. And if you buy petrol, it's 50%. I picked her up at school and we're driving home. She says, Dad, she's very excited. She said, I figured out what we do about tax. And I said, no, she was 7. I said, what? She says, call the police.
Oh bless. How very sensible.
She called the police. And I said, why? She said, well, the government's stealing. It's stealing. I said, yeah, but here's the thing. The police are paid for by the government. And she had this look of horror that only a 7 or 8-year-old can have on a realization. And she said, that's crooked. Anyway, that's enough of me. Tell me about someone in my situation. Affordability is a big issue for homeschooling and how to go about it. Because the last time I homeschooled my kids, I never sought permission on a matter of principle. So my kids were the 3 kids truant in Canterbury. There was 400 kids truant, and my kids were 3 of them. And I'd get these letters from this Maori trust that was set up and paid for by the Ministry of Education to hunt down truants. And they'd send it very politely, you know, dear Mr. Hyde, notice that your kids aren't in school. Is there any help that we can give you? No, we're good. We're good. Is there anything you can do? Yada, 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 yada. No. And then after a while, the letters just stopped, as I thought they would, and I was left alone. On this basis, I didn't think I should have to seek someone's permission to school my own children, so I refused to. How will that go this term?
Are you going to get an exemption, or are you just going to take them out of school and get on with it?
My thinking at this stage, and again, I'll be advised by you, I'm thinking of just a term because he does need to develop socially. He's very social, but in a way not. And I'm going to say, look, he's struggling a bit at school. I'm going to keep him out for a term, try and get him up to speed and bring him back for term 4. See you then.
Mm-hmm.
And leave it at that. The teacher might be pleased not to have him.
So you're just intending on telling the school that? Okay.
Yes. I'll let listeners know how that goes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you're a story and project in motion, Rodney. We'll wait for the next installation.
I'm not applying to some bureaucrat. These schools are trying to sexualize my kids. They're trying to make them racist. They're not teaching them. He's 10 and can't do the 4 times table. So God knows what they're doing all day. And if they want to have an argument, I'm up for it.
You're braver than me.
Not really. But I am. I guess I've been on the other side of government. And I don't rate it. Like, I know the Ministry of Education. It's horrific. So I know I don't care about them. Probably because of this broadcast, they'll be down on me like a ton of bricks. But that's interesting itself. What are they going to do, arrest me because I'm teaching my kids to do arithmetic?
No, let us know. Just keep
the date. If we have a date set and I don't turn up, you'll know why. I've been arrested. Now, tell us about what goes on in affordability for homeschooling. That was a thing that you put down.
It was, and it came about as a result of me speaking to an old homeschool friend. We've been friends for, 15, 20 years, and we were talking about homeschooling, and It probably relates to choosing to put your kids into daycare as well so you can work. And she said, it's just not the same anymore as it was for us, Christine. It's just not affordable anymore. And both parents have to work. And I said, well, I don't buy it. And she said, it is. It isn't like it was. And she emphasized that again. And I said, okay, well, we're just going to have to agree to disagree here. And I'm going to do some research because I've been out of it for 7 years and in part-time work now. I know what it was like for us for the 20 years. We had to be very, I have a degree in frugalology, by the way.
Yes, all housewives do.
Yes.
Am I allowed to use housewife?
Oh, please. It's an
Okay.
honorable title. I love it. And I thought, well, I'm going to go back to the coal face. I'm already on some chat groups in Telegram, New Zealand, Australian, American, and an international one. So four different chat groups. And I went home and I put a question to them and I told them briefly what the protest, counter protest was from my friend. And I said, tell me what you're doing. How are you affording this? What's it like? What decisions are you making? What sacrifices are you making? What do you do in order to be able to afford to homeschool? And I said, please message me and let me know. And I was astonished, actually. I got instant replies back off all four groups. I had some contact me privately, message me privately. One asked for confidentiality. And I was blown away by the responses. In a nutshell, when I collected them all together, the common denominator was the commitment to really want to do it. Once you've made your mind up to do that, then you turn your face to the problem of affordability and you are now determined to overcome that. And that was some of the nitty-gritty that I got from some of these, mostly mums, the occasional father chipped in too from the coal face. And I was so encouraged and relieved, actually, that I wasn't wrong, not just because I wanted to be right, I don't mean it like that, but for the families that make these choices now, like now, in most cases, even though you're really wondering how you can afford it, there are ways to do it.
What other ways?
Well, after you've made the commitment, you then
By the
start.
way, can I interrupt there?
Yes.
I'll get into trouble. There's a big difference, isn't there, between wanting to do something and deciding to do something.
Oh, yes.
So I have wanted for some time to homeschool my son, but at the end of last term, I decided to. And I'm still struggling to know how to make it work. But it's like a decision's made and you confront the problems. If you're
Absolutely.
wanting to do it, the problems mean you don't. But having decided to do it, which is what you're saying about these parents, decide to do it and then confront the issues.
Yes.
Let's hear about how they did it.
All
And
right.
afforded it.
I should probably what would you say? It's not really a disclaimer, but just acknowledge that there will be some situations where no matter what you do or are prepared to do, you may be unable to financially achieve wanting to
Yes.
homeschool your children. However, that being said, if you really want to, there are usually ways that you can do it. It will involve sacrifice, being prepared to let things go, which I realize is sacrifice after all, and making lifestyle changes. It may involve, and this is where so many of them did, they got part-time work. There were several times over our homeschooling years where I had a part-time job on the side. Sometimes the husband will take up some extra work as well. And just for the sake of this episode too, I'm going to just assume that most families who are homeschooling, the income provider is the husband. So let's just go with that. So for some, it involved the husband either upgrading his skills so that he could be paid more, applying for other jobs where there was an increase in wages or salary, and getting some for the mum part-time job on the side. Flexi time featured also, so that during the week there was these working arrangements, so that the husband could work outside normal hours and he could be with the children, say, while the wife went and did her part-time job. There was a lot of sharing of resources, not necessarily buying things new. There was a lot of people who were just prepared to go without flash haircuts, buying new clothes regularly, learning the art of thrift and frugalness, becoming students in frugalology, and just growing in that changing
And
attitude.
that's because sticking with mum had to stop work.
Yes.
And that's the big loss.
Well, yes, there's a sudden, well, if both parents are working full time, for instance, and they decide to homeschool their child, suddenly half, well, not half, but necessarily, but her income gone. So
And it
it's.
could be dad's income's going on the mortgage and you're living on mum's income.
It could be that too. So there's a net decrease, if you like, but also go around the other side of that and have a look back at how you were spending that extra income, and going, well, you needed to have possibly a wardrobe that meant that reflected your job. Now you don't have to be so concerned about that. You can now cook from scratch, so you don't need to be spending more money on more processed foods. You ne aren't necessarily running a second car all the time. You're not putting your kids in daycare or after school programs. So there are a lot of things that you're not spending out on anymore. And there are a lot of associated costs to take a child to school anyway. It's not free.
I was quite shocked when I stopped being an MP how much money I saved because you'd basically wear the same clothes day in and day out and not buying a suit. You're not drinking coffee out and about, not having lunch and dinner out, not having to do things. And as you say, you start cooking, start having a garden. In my case now, I'm wonderfully got over my fear of hens, and we've got hens. And I was actually quite shocked how much my expenditure dropped. And it must be tougher for a woman because appearance, a man can get up in the same old suit day in and day out, and MPs do, you can tell. But for a woman, they've got to dress a lot smarter. And women notice what they're wearing each day. So it's a big lot of money, right? To work and your lunch, and sort of your lunch and dinners out become a social thing for work, and then drinks. Big saving.
Lunches. So when you look at the net, this is something I have challenged young mums before, is that what is your net income of your personal woman's job? When you take into account all of those expenditures that you have by necessity that you work, because time is money, money is time. And if you have less time available because you're working full time, you have to spend money on some of those things that you don't have the time to prepare for. So take into account all of those things that you won't necessarily be spending anymore, and just do the maths on it. There does mean that you now have, with your decision, your commitment to homeschool, there is a complete pivot in the way that your thinking starts to come about. But once you've decided to do something, you change little bit by little bit. And I think it's unreasonable to expect that, like that, your mind and your attitude and your ability is all going to change overnight because you made this decision to homeschool. Be kind and gracious with yourself. You will learn more and more how to let go of things that you choose not to buy anymore, excuse me, and be gracious about it. There may be days when you feel resentful about it. I stopped going into shops very early on in my motherdom, because what was the point? I couldn't afford to buy them. So why would I Why would I go browsing? So I undid that habit that I learned in my rich, young, and single days over a period of time. And I still find no pleasure in browsing around in shops. So just acknowledge that it's going to take time to relearn this new challenge in life.
What about the pooling of homeschooling? Because what I've noticed around our district is increased the number of homeschoolers and want to homeschoolers is increasing dramatically.
Yes.
And you sometimes think it's confirmation bias. It's like when you're thinking about buying a car, you suddenly notice them everywhere and you think, oh, it's a popular car. So I wonder if it's a confirmation bias. But a lot of the, it's mothers. So, oh, well, I know, affordability, affordability, affordability. Many of them have jobs that they can choose to work when they choose. So picking on one example, she's a painter and paper hanger. So she could do 3 days a week, not five. And she could meet up with me or another mum and three or four of us, and we rotate. Does that work?
Oh, look, it can absolutely work. There are so many ways to accomplish a goal when you set out to do something. And with our modern availability to do remote working and have more flexi hours available to us, say, than when the 20 years when we started, the options are actually so much more than what we had. And it's the old saying, if you like, that where there's a will, there's a way. And when you're with a group of people that are thinking the same as you we used to call it our business meetings. And to have a cup of coffee with these ladies and a cake maybe once a week now becomes a treat and a luxury rather than something that was just common that you did every day. But they turned into business meetings. Because you sat down and you would trade advices and you would agree to enter an arrangement where you look after my kids one day and then I'll look after yours one day. So, yes, those flexibilities are there. Also, when you're in a community, a local homeschooling community, especially if it's been established for a while, they already have so many resources that are going to save you so much money.
Yes. Because I rushed out and bought all the curricula, and that wasn't a small amount of money. It was like several hundreds, a couple of hundred, 300. And I ended up binning most of it because it was like history and sociology. And I looked at it and it just turned me sick. And I largely used the mathematics or arithmetic curriculum to see what they needed to be taught. I looked at how they were teaching it and couldn't follow it, and ended up teaching my kids how we learned. They did number lines and they were trying to learn division and that by number lines. And it's just like, oh, I couldn't get my head into it, nor could my kids. And then I showed them how we did. Oh, yeah, no, I got that. Carry the one. And as you say, if you get into a network, and of course, with social media, you can quickly find a network in your district.
Yes. And one of the things I have recommended in the past is that don't go out and buy a box curriculum straight away. You will want to because it will satisfy your consumer way that you have bought something to fill a need. But what I would recommend you do is stop, just give it time, go and find your experienced homeschoolers. The kids don't need to have books on the first day of homeschooling. There are other
No.
ways that you can do what you're doing every day to teach them something while you are assessing what it is that would be a good idea to now spend your precious dollars on, because now you're really watching every single dollar. So take your time before you actually go spending anything. There are so many resources online too. I think have I
Yes.
mentioned the Khan Academy before,
Yes.
Rodney?
No, you haven't, but I'm
Okay, well,
familiar with it.
Khan Academy is a
Brilliant.
free online space.
Brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then there's an English one that you pay for that the New Zealand schools use, and a maths one that you can pay for, which I found very good for my kids that this I got through the school originally. I found I had to sit there a bit with them to do it because they'd wander off. Do you know the hardest thing I had to overcome? My picture of what it was to homeschool.
Which was what? What did that look like for you?
Oh, I know exactly what it looked like. My three kids at three desks and three chairs, and me up the front with a blackboard. And I thought, how's that ever going to work? And it's 9 o'clock, sit up, and now we're going to do this, kids. And what I discovered instead was this. My wife spent half an hour with the little one, and I took half an hour with one girl, and then half an hour with the other, her sister. And that was sitting down at the dinner table with a pencil and paper and going through arithmetic. And it was fractions, division, times table, just that basic stuff that we all know, actually. So we're primary school. 20 minutes of that, not every day, some days. Then I would get them to read, and I literally didn't care what they read. Obviously, nothing untoward, but what they enjoyed reading, which were books I'd never heard of, you know, because there's wonderful books out there, and they'd get into them and they'd read and read and read and read. Then I'd get them to write a little bit, and I'd get them to write a news story or tell me about what something happened today. They wouldn't do an hour a day total. My girls went through 3 or 4 years worth of maths in a term, just one on one. It was quite shocking. And as I said, just went back and found maths at school easy after that, and their confidence went through the roof. And then they were quite good at maths because of the mental thing. But it was to overcome that image of what it is to homeschool. And Alwyn Poole, who may be known to listeners and to you, he's a very good educationist, who I knew from my electorate days. And he told me to read to them. And I thought, oh, that's odd. But oh my goodness, how wonderful it is to sit with your children in an evening and read to them. And we'd make them do it. And in the finish, they would ask to be read to. All three of them, different ages. And I read to them Tom Sawyer, Huckleberry Finn, Winnie the Pooh, because it doesn't matter what age you are, Winnie the Pooh's always good. Wind in the Willows. And it was almost like the book itself didn't matter. It was that mum or dad were reading to us at night.
Yes.
And that seemed to spark them to want to read.
Yes. And you chose such good books for them too, Rodney.
Well, I made a mistake early on because I always remember Lord of the Flies being such a shocking book. And my older daughter got reading it quite young. And I was reading it with her. she said, "It's a little dark, Dad."
A little. Oh, gosh.
I said, "I'd forgotten just how dark this book is." And so we stopped reading.
Yeah.
She used the word dark.
Yes.
But yes, there were a lot of great books. I've just bought for my daughter Wuthering Heights.
Oh, yes. You said last time we talked you were going to do that. Mm. Yes. How's it going?
She hasn't started it yet. She wants to. I've got her to listen to Kate Bush's song, and she can't get that out of her head. So that's a good start. And I said, she had to read a lot of books. She went into a competition, which was funny. It was held in Invercargill, and it was from around the area, and you had to read assigned books and then be quizzed on them. It was how good you were remembering trivial facts from these books. And the books were Kiwi books that no one would have read in their right mind, so you had no pre-background in them. And they were appalling books, she said, so boring. But she read them and then did this puzzle, and so she's just ended that. And so we're now getting her into Wuthering Heights. Although I did say to her the other day, I said, "You're sitting around, lying around, and you could be helping us work." And she said, "Dad, I'm reading." I said, "Oh, I hope you're reading something good." She said, "I'm reading the Bible, and I'm reading How to Win Friends and Influence People." And I said, "Well, that's a pass."
Yes.
I bought her How to Win Friends and Influence People because she had a sort of problem with interacting, and that fixed it. It's a wonderful book. And to be fair, she's reading a kid's Bible, but she was doing it. So there you go. That reading, it's a special joy to read to your kids.
It is. But it's so holistic, I suppose, is a good word to use, because you're enjoying it. You've realized that as you adopted this new habit, that there's something very special happening within the family dynamics. The children are entering a game, because you probably read to them when they were very little too, and they'd sit up on your knee and you'd read to them, and it tends to go once they start school so much. But now they're back in a closeness to you, and they're enjoying the sensation, this deep awareness of love between the parent and the child. That's difficult to put into words, but it's the actual business of getting down and reading something with them just creates it and builds on it. So it's paying dividends into the parent-child relationship. And then from a practical level, it's a rollicking good story, and now they're actually learning something in it too. They're learning from you, if you're the one reading, cadence and interpretation and tone, so that when they learn to read out loud, they're not just going to have this monotone thing going through like that. They're learning where to put punctuation in a sentence, because they can hear it. They might be following it along the page. I can remember doing that when I was a little girl, watching the words go by and realizing what a comma was. So they're learning all these things, but it's almost like it's osmosis, because you didn't actually set out to do it when you sat down that night on the couch. But they're learning every single time. And then they're building new vocabulary and phrases, just simply because you're choosing really good books for them that are often just outside what they would be able to read themselves, but it's extending and pushing and building these muscles on the outside of their intelligence and academic knowledge. So on so many levels, sitting down and reading a very good book is much more than what you ever would have realized in the simple act of reading.
It's a wonderful thing for grandparents too.
Oh gosh, yes. Oh yes, I started reading Clever Polly and the Stupid Wolf. Have you heard of Clever Polly and the Stupid Wolf? Oh gosh, it's so good. It's funny. So cleverly written. Starts off on the premise of just starts building on all of the fairy stories and tales you could think of that involve wolves. But it's this little girl, Polly, who has a wolf who would like to eat her. She's clever and the wolf is stupid. So every story within the book has this wolf trying to figure out a way that he can eat Polly. And it brings up the three little pigs and Little Red Riding Hood and all of the other instances in stories that you would be accustomed to of the wolf. And it's so clever. The author has just escaped me for now. And so I started reading that to her. And also the series My Naughty Little Sister,
Don't know that either.
Dorothy Edwards, which is actually a history book because it was written quite a few decades ago. And I think it's set in maybe the 50s or the 60s. So a lot of what they're talking about in terms of what happens in the house and the neighbor is from a bygone era, which is now history, similar to the James Herriot books, which is like reading an historical novel because the world that he inhabited has all these things that your son, having to do some history, could be learning via the whole veterinary animal scenario, but he's actually learning some history too. So these books, and that's where I do get excited about all of that, they are such a marvelous springboard for education.
Harry McCleary
Oh gosh, from Donaldson's Dairy. Oh, I love that.
and Dr. Seuss and Juno. I can't stop reading Winnie the Pooh. I still love that book.
Tiddly
Yeah.
pom.
And I've got this, I can't stand the woman because of her politics. Judi Dench is one of the main readers of it. I got an Audible book, and whenever I'm in the car with my son, I put on Winnie the Pooh, and we just love it. We listen to a chapter, and it's very well read, an Audible book. And I can listen to it over and over, Winnie the Pooh, because it's so, as an adult, you can see the characters, like Eeyore, the depressive one, and it's always a glass half full, and silly old bear. It's just so many levels to Winnie the Pooh. It's such a clever book. And I can remember being in Standard 3 in 1966 when I was 10, and our teacher used to read us a chapter of Winnie the Pooh each day. Mr. Dent was his name. And we kids thought it was childish, like Winnie the Pooh. But we loved it. And all day long, we'd be telling Winnie the Pooh jokes. You know, oh, what's up, Eeyore, and things like that, you know. And so it tickled us, even though we thought it was a bit too young for us. And it's never left me. And those, you know, what colour would my balloon be if it was still a balloon? I still use that one. I have a tendency, however, to read books that are a bit beyond my kids, like Lord of the Flies, and thinking, gee, this is a bit dark. And I wonder how my daughter will go with Wuthering the Heights. But she's a good reader, but it's a complex book. So I'll give a report on that. And I'm thinking about what to read to my son. So I'm going to start him off with a basic book. I love Dr. Seuss. But to grandparents, you see, I'd love your view. I'm a bit of a stickler on devices and not having them. Now, my two girls have phones, carefully monitored and only to be used when they are somewhere and need to ring me. I don't let them sit on computers without knowing what they're doing. And my son would play games all day if you'd let him, and I don't. And I found it an easy trap when I was homeschooling. If I needed to do something, I'd let them play on the computer for an hour while I did what I needed to do. And I realized that was the worst thing that I could do ever. I am, I suspect that smartphones, are the worst thing that's happened to kids.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I listened to Matt Walsh do a podcast, and he won't let his kids have phones. He's an American Catholic conservative podcaster, very popular. And he's so black and white. And he says, no bloody phones for your kids. And I'm sitting there thinking, oh, that's all very well, Matt, for you. But, like, I've got stuff to do. And he gave a practical piece of advice. He said, leave your kids with a box, a wooden cardboard box. Tell them to play with that. I thought, well, that'll never work. So this is with my little son. And he gets up, oh, I'm going on the computer. You're not going on the computer. You're not going on the computer. There's a wooden box from the supermarket. Play with that. Oh, the wooden box. Yeah, that's all you got. 20 minutes he moped around wanting to be on the computer. He then spent the next 2 hours playing with that cardboard box. Made it an aeroplane, a spaceship. Had the time of his life.
Yes.
And I thought, how funny. It's very important that you allow your children to be bored, absolutely bored, rigid, and have them find something to do. We don't do that anymore, I noticed. And the more I've done that, no, you're not doing that, go and occupy yourself. And they'll grumble and grizzle and then go and do something eventually and have a whale of a time. We sound like old people complaining, but we didn't have the option of being constantly titillated and excited growing up. We actually had to make our own entertainment. I suspect that's a lost art with our kids.
I think so. I see so many children who's, especially the small family children, I don't know why that is, but where the mum feels she's got to fill up there every afternoon after school, yes, arrange play dates with them all the time. And
because oversee them,
that they might get bored or, but there's a principle in the Charlotte Mason approach, which I've mentioned before, called masterly inactivity. And unpack that just means give them time, like you did with your son, by themselves, so that they have to think and create and imagine, because that takes time, a reasonably significant period of time. If you think about even your own time that you put aside where you've got to think about ideas and the amount of time that it takes for something to bubble up actually takes time. So to give your child the gift of a period of time where you simply back out, but it's done with a purpose, so you are being a responsible mother, and allowing them to have space, resources around them that, like your box or a box of dress-up clothes or blocks and the Legos on the floor or something like that, where they're actually turning some of their ideas and what they heard you reading to them or what they read themselves or the things that they've just noticed outside, they're starting to create and move. It's such an important part of a child's intellectual development. Get out of your child's bubble and let them be. And understand that it is to a greater purpose. Call it masterly activity, inactivity.
It's a great word,
like.
Great phrase.
It's a great phrase. And once you know that that's the purpose, you can deal with that mum guilt that you have because you feel like you've got to fill there every moment, otherwise you're being a really bad mother. That's not true.
And, again, I've learned, I will leave them alone on their own playing for 3 hours. I know what they're doing if they're young. Now they're a bit older, they'll often lose sight of them. But you know they're around. And devices and time on devices kills that imagination. My son got a sack barrow, you know, those things that you use to wheel something around, you know, little $40 or whatever you get it, I had an old sack barrow lying around. He has played with that thing endlessly, run around with it, pushed it. I don't know what he thinks he's doing, but it's his greatest toy.
He's got a great story going on in his mind yes. there, Rodney. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And a few sticks. And, of course, again, you know from your own childhood, you'd have half a dozen marbles or a ball or a tire or a cart, time of your life, a bike, and inside, Lego or Meccano or cards, things that you'd make out of cards. You know, we used to make houses out of cards for, well, it seemed like ours. My kids will still do that, build things out of cards. And it's, you can see their imagination for firing up. Whereas if they're on a device playing a stupid game, they're gone mentally.
Yes. Yes. So it's quite a skill, I think, for parents to learn to manage that. In some ways, it's actually easier to not have it at all.
Yes.
But that doesn't reflect the reality of the world we're living in. It's actually harder to acknowledge that these are the things that we have at our disposal. But how are we going to do these? What is a good way to use them? And how can you help your child learn the discipline of how long to spend on something? Well, here's a clue. They've got to see you doing it first. And how to manage what we have as an inevitable part of our life. So in our day, before we had all the, you know, the computer and the smartphones, there was television. So I had some homeschooling family friends whose solution was they didn't have television at all in their house. Fair enough, that's their family decision. We chose to, and there were days when I thought, oh gosh, it'd just be so much easier if I didn't have the blimmin' television, then I don't have to make these decisions and help oversee fights about what they're going to watch. But they, I think they for us, and I suspect other families, they're actually better off for having to have learned how to manage this television and discuss with each other how they were going to watch it. They got smart and combined the screen time that we assigned to, they had a budget of screen time they were allowed to have each day. And they learnt by themselves to combine that so that they could watch a longer movie together. And they, so they learnt to manage that. And I think now with the modern families, they've got these devices. So that's my suggestion, is don't dispose of it, learn how to manage it. And we've got a lot of backpedaling to do with our kids on these devices. I'd love to interview Jonathan Haight. Please get him on RCR.
Should do.
And talk about that amazing
book. I see he
book.
Spoke at the Family First conference.
Oh, okay.
And that's up and available, and everyone should watch it because it's a complete eye-opener. I've got a funny story about TV for you that a friend of mine outlined, and I realise this probably affects myself. I don't have it. I wouldn't have had a TV 20 years or longer. And he didn't have a TV, and his son was playing rugby, 7 or 8, and absolutely useless at it. It was don't pass the ball, you'll run the wrong way and whatever, right? And then they decided to get a TV to watch the Olympics or some Commonwealth Games or some sporting event. And they got TV and there was a rugby game on. And so they watched the game of rugby as a family together. The kid went out next Saturday and aced it. He had never ever seen a game of rugby.
Huh?
He didn't know what to do. And my son played rugby last year and struggled. And then I realized he's never watched a game of rugby in his life. Isn't that funny? Because like you just think everyone knows how to play rugby, right?
Yes.
But if you're 7 or 8 years old and you've never seen a game, you can't figure out the point. Mm. And everyone was telling my son, you know, to run, run. What?
Where?
Which way? He'd run the wrong way. He just didn't know. Like, he just, what am I doing? When you get it down, put the ball down. What? Tackle him. Hey, what? So that it's just so peculiar, like trying to put yourself into your kid's mind, because you can't help but reflect on how we grew up. And of course it's a different world, and I'm with you. I don't think you can deny them computers, and you can't deny yourself that ability for your kids to say, can you come and pick me up? But I just carefully manage it. It's a great tool. And what to do if you're in trouble, here's a phone. Other thing that I discovered, to my chagrin, was the books that you like or liked aren't the books that they will like. I loved Enid Blyton. And I got from the library all the Enid Blyton books. You're going to love this, kids. Famous Five. God, this is... No, it's great. And my daughter had started reading Percy Jackson. Oh, my goodness, I started reading Percy Jackson. I thought, forget the Famous Five. This is a great book. And Harry Potter is a great book compared to the Famous Five. And you realize that, like, the books that are around can be better than what you thought was a great book when you were a kid. They're a bit slow and ponderous compared to Percy Jackson and Harry Potter. Man, they're great books. Mm-hmm. And Diary of a Wimpy Kid and all the rest of it. So I've learnt to be a bit relaxed. The other problem I have as a parent is movies. There are so many good movies destroyed unnecessarily by an obligatory sex scene.
Mm-hmm.
Or an obligatory bad language. They feel as though they have to throw a sex scene in. Even documentaries about the Roman Empire, they feel as though Julius Caesar has to hop in the sack with someone and show you. And you're thinking, to what end? Or you'll be watching a good movie and then the F word appears. Now, I've learnt to Google the movies before I put them on, because you can remember a movie, oh, the kids would like this, and you start watching and you recoil in horror. So I Google it ahead of time. But I got We Love Cruella and Wonka. These two movies that kids love, and my wife and I probably watched each of them 5 times and we still love them. They're singing movies and they're just wonderfully done. And there are other ones that don't come to mind, but you have to be so careful with what they're watching.
Yes, you should do. You do. You be so vigilant. You can't unsee something.
Nope.
For movies, when we the rule, if you like, our house rule was that if a movie was based on a book, book first, movie second. Because the book has so much more depth and breadth to it. And if you do it the other way around, you then end up reading or listening to the book with images and scenes that the movie has already put in your your brain. So, again, one of the purposes of reading a good book to a child is that in their brain, they get to formulate that scenario themselves in their mind. And then you can go to the movie later, and it may or may not coincide with what you invented in your in.
Have you ever seen a movie that was better than the book?
Never.
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 I'm the only person I know, God, I'll get shot, that didn't enjoy Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit and didn't watch them. I watched the first one at the premiere and never even watched the finish of it because I so loved the books. And I thought the movie was brilliantly done, technically brilliant.
Yes.
But it was just a pale, weak, boring rendition of a great book.
And yet
And
they were epic movies. But I think you're right, Rodney. You can't really. A movie represents a book, is probably for me the fairest description, but it doesn't replace it.
No.
My husband and I watched The 39 Steps.
Oh, James,
In
John Buchanan,
yes, so we
John
watched
Buchan,
two
John Buchan.
Buchan, yes,
Now,
and we
that's a
watched
very old movie.
it is well, we watched an older one, which didn't really deal with the
Black and white.
concept of the German thing behind it.
Yes.
And so then we found a more modern one that had the actor from Spooks in it, Rupert somebody, and that actually kept more to the script than some. So that was a recommended version of it, and clean. Yay. So we enjoyed that. And if we kind of pivot that back to like affordability, all of those classic books are highly likely to be in your homeschool community
And in the library.
and in the library. And if you can't find them in the library and they're in their stack collection, you just request them and they can bring them in from elsewhere. And because they're such very good books, you can collect them and form your own library at home too. In our house, okay, so Harry Potter came in when let me see, our eldest was about 12, and we knew that it was going to be really popular, so we had to pre-read this, and already it was starting to get bad press amongst some Christian homeschoolers because it was about wizards. So I thought, well, I can't hide my child or the two older ones from this. I need to manage this and just see what it's about. So I did, and I realized that when you have been exposed to incredibly good literature that has stood the test of time down through the ages, and then you put as good as it is the script of Philosopher's Stone against some of these other classic ones, you can't really compare the depth of
Ever.
the literature. The hooks in the book were excellent. She wrote incredibly well. However, in our house, they could read Harry Potter in their own time. It wasn't a school book. So we would make differentiations
Interesting.
between what was read in your own time, read this for school.
Because in a funny way, I just worked if they're reading, it's good.
Would you apply the same thing to food, Rodney?
Of course not.
Yeah. So,
But,
I apply the same thing to books.
yes, but here's what I found. My older boy, who was born in 1989, he got reading with Harry Potter. And he quickly developed an interest in the great books.
Yes.
But before he read Harry Potter, he wasn't much of a reader.
Wonderful stepping stone. Absolutely.
Yes. And but I concur with you, and this is hard. I've said to my oldest daughter, I want you to read one classic because there has to be one classic book. I think I've read all of them virtually. I had a time in my life where I was doing a job which left my evenings free and alone in the North Sea oil rigs. And so I took it upon myself to teach myself English literature. And I would go and buy three or four Penguin classics and just lie in my room reading them. Had nothing else to do. And I read them all. I didn't get through the Russians. But oh my goodness, what an education that was.
Yes.
And then on my time off from the oil rigs, I'd go to the places like Wuthering Heights. I went to Haworth and saw the house where they lived, the Bronte sisters, and walked across the moors, and I felt it. And I went all through Stratford-upon-Avon, not that William Shakespeare wrote Shakespeare, but I got the sense of it. But to read a classic, nothing comes close to that to me. Wuthering Heights is going to be my daughter's book. I love Dickens, Thomas Hardy, the Brontes, George Eliot. Brilliant books. I've never read War and Peace. Have you?
No, I've read, or I should say listened to, the brothers Dostoevsky.
Kamarov.
Yeah.
Brothers Kamarov.
Yeah, the brothers Kamarov by Dostoevsky. Yes, that's right.
And what's his Justice one? Something. I've read that.
Oh, and Anna Karenina.
Oh, beautiful book.
Yes.
I've read that book.
Isn't that, it's about consequences, that book. If I could sum it up in one word, it's consequences. You make choices in life and there are consequences.
There's one movie that I believe captured the book, Dr. Zhivago.
Yeah.
I love that book and I love the movie. That movie, gosh, I've got to sit down with my kids and watch Dr. Zhivago. Gosh, that movie moved me, and the book even more. But the movie captured it.
That's a rare thing.
Julie Christie was so stunning in Omar Sharif. And Royden Christie, who used to be on TV here in New Zealand, he's her nephew. And whenever I met Royden Christie, I'd bow my head. Because, man, did I love Julie Christie in that movie. Not her as the actress, but that character of Lara and the music.
Yes, the music. It was remarkable.
David Lean. By the way, Omar Sharif was very upset with the making of the movie and the script. Because you won't realise this, but he doesn't feature often. And say much. David Lean said to him, don't worry, the book is about you, the movie's about you, and you will be the star. And so it was, because there was just the look and that haunted look, the little boy when they're burying his mother. Oh my goodness, what a movie and a book.
Yeah. I'll have to watch it again.
Yes, we both will. I'm going to get it out for my kids. Libraries are great. And the other thing I found with my kids when I was homeschooling them was I wasn't afraid to take them into the library for 2 or 3 hours. And they would sit there and read odd books, play with stuff. Then, of course, the trend started. Library and they had to start.
I wouldn't leave my kids alone in the libraries at the moment. I really
Nor
wouldn't.
Would I. Do you know, we had a lady contact us. Her kids were in the public library and there was a man watching porn.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
And they went to the librarian to complain and they said, yes, we've had lots of complaints. Libraries. There we go. Christine Smith talking about homeschooling. It's been a real chit-chat rather than a lecture. How do we find your presentations, Christine?
I podcast most weeks on YouTube and you can find it. It's called Coming Home, Survive and Thrive.
Coming Home, Survive and Thrive. I love our talk. And we'll see what feedback I get. I'm going to be in trouble with listeners for talking so much. But we have a wee project, and it's just this idea of my son and pulling him out for a term. It's not a thing I want to do. It's a thing I've decided to do.
I've got one book that he might like, Rodney.
Yes.
Danny, Champion of the World, Roald Dahl.
Oh, Oh, Road Dahl. My kids love Road Dahl, but I don't know that one.
Oh, Danny, it's my favourite. And
Oh.
Book first, movie second.
Danny the Champion. My kids read Roald Dahl and they adore him, the older kids.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, he's become a cancelled type of guy for some reason. I can't remember. He said the wrong thing or something at some stage.
Oh, there was a black spider and I think it's in the Twits he calls – that Mr. and Mrs. Twit, they were big, fat and ugly or something like that. And so he got done for making inappropriate comments or something like that.
If you're good and great, you got to be pulled down. Roald Dahl. Oh, there we go. Good work. Christine Smith, homeschooler par excellence, truly blessed to have her on our show. I feel empowered. I hope you do too. Not just to run off and homeschool, but to read to our kids, to spend time with our kids, to have our kids get bored and entertain themselves. You're on Reality Check Radio, Real Talk with Rodney Hyde. Send me a text at 2057. Email me inbox@realitycheck.radio. Thank you so much for listening.
With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom by simply visiting www.realitycheck.radio/donate to make a difference today.